On behalf of Rebuilding Your Life Radio and the Train Your Brain, Claim Your Power calls, welcome. I'm your host, Susan Sciarrico. I'm delighted to share Rose Sweetflower's story today, which she shared in her book, Truly Loved. She's on her way to living her dream, which I know she wants to tell you all about. So please wave your hands to welcome Rose Sweetflower. Welcome to the show, Rose.
Oh, hi, Susan. Thank you very much, hon. I appreciate it.
Yeah, welcome back from your vacation.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was, every day was perfect. It was so nice.
Oh, that's wonderful. Where did you go?
I went back to New Mexico on our 10 acres.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, that's where we're going to build our home and spend the rest of my forever with my one and only love of my life.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is wonderful. You know, a large part of my work as a transformational life and business consultant revolves around discovering each person's dream and then helping them to achieve it. So is this your dream, getting this 10-acre place going?
Yes, it started off being my husband's just before we met, but because he grew up in the town nearby, then it became both of ours. And there's a mountain there. I think it's called Mount Escadilla. And that's where he wants his ashes when he dies. And we can actually see it from our property. So that's a dream come true.
Oh, wow. That's marvelous. But why is that space so important to you? I mean, if you take us back to when you were a young child and sort of catch us up about your life in your early years.
Well, up to the point why this is important to me on the property.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna be on.
Right.
Okay. Well, I grew up in the deserts of Nevada, the mountains, or the hills of Kentucky, and the mountains of Idaho. So where do you want me to start? Just a little bit from the beginning?
I think so. I mean, I think a really relevant part of your story has to do with your relationship with your sisters and your mom. What was going on at that point?
Well, we were in Nevada. There's my oldest sister, then me, and then the twins. In fact, I was born January 1st. The twins were born in November. So all three of us born the same year. But so all four of us are born. Our parents, you know, I think my dad was 23 when he married my mom, and my mom was only 15. But like 5 years later, then they had my oldest sister, then a couple of years later, me, and then the twins. Well, after a while, she was probably immature, wasn't really a very good mother. She would neglect us. She would go to the bars, buy drinks for the men while my father was working in the mines and things like that. Well, eventually that caught up with her and they got divorced. And during that time, he didn't get us, but this was in the 60s, so the mother got us most of the time. But she had us like 9 months out of the year. Eventually, she took us to Kentucky to be with her hillbilly folk. So we were back there learning to talk hillbilly and live the life as a hillbilly. And I mean, we were barefoot. I mean, we had worms. We were skinny. We didn't know what food was hardly. Mm. And then the welfare people contacted my dad, who was back in Nevada, who had remarried. Actually, he remarried my aunt because she was married to my mother's brother, so she used to be her aunt. But he married her. They had a baby. The baby died. They adopted a son. So in the meantime, the welfare people are telling my dad, your girls are being neglected. So my dad thought, well, it's time for me to make a trip and go kidnap my girls. So he went to a lawyer, and the lawyer helped him change his Social Security number. I don't know how, but he did. Mm-hmm. And then him and his new wife and baby made the trip out to Kentucky. They found me and my sister coming out of the store. We got in the car with them. We were really happy to see him and drove back to our house. But my oldest sister wasn't there. She was in Holland, Michigan with my grandparents because, you know, they favored her and she was with them. So we took some pictures with her mom there and everybody, and then our dad followed the bus up to Michigan, and he checked his wife and baby in a motel, and then he knew that my mother couldn't resist him buying her stuff, like a dress or something, so we got in the car with him, and drove to the store, and he left us in the car. So in my book, I'm describing that I'm playing with my yo-yo and my black purse with the gold, with the brass chain, things like that. And then while she's in the dressing room, he kidnaps us, takes us away. But when I start the book, I'm actually in Texas, and my husband is not in the family anymore. I'd been married, what, about 20-some years, but he's in prison for serious crimes. And I'm with my 6 out of 7 of my children. And I get this phone call from my cousin that my mother's in the hospital. And I'm like, how did you get my my number? She said, well, you were the only one of the girls who contacted her that told us where you live. And so we called you and to tell you that she's got cancer and she's in the hospital. So then so the book starts out with this phone call and me and my children. And then while I'm on the airplane, I'm reminiscing as if it's a movie, because that's how I thought of it as in the beginning. So I'm and I'm reminiscing back. So now I'm reminiscing, and I'm with some of my sisters, and I'm seeing my mother. But during all that time, I'm telling the story of everything about, you know, my real mother, my father, and everything. So I don't know how much to tell without giving it all away.
You don't have to tell me all of it, but it's interesting because you are, you know, this had to have a tremendous impact on you as you were growing up. I mean, there's a, you know, to leave behind your mother and to, you know, how did you feel about it when you realized that you weren't going to see her again?
Well, I was 7 years old at the time, and little did I know it wouldn't be till 22 years later when I was 29 that I got to see her.
Wow,
but I've done some research on the effects that it has on children when they're when there's a child abduction, and other than PTSD, it says that there's the impact of being kidnapped is a traumatic experience, that the children need a safe place to process their emotions, which we didn't have because our our new stepmother, she made us call her mommy. We had to start a new school. We had hillbilly accents. We had to come home when she told us if we were a minute late, we'd be punished. We just never felt safe or loved. We did by our father, but not by her, because I think she was jealous of us. You know, she wanted our dad to herself, and she had to deal with us. There were times when our dad would be at work, and she'd put us to bed, and she wouldn't give us any covers. She'd make us stay outside without coats. She would make us strip and whip us, leave marks on us, all kinds of stuff. And I see it says there's a sense of numbing, and I remember feeling this afterwards, like, why do I not feel any emotions? It's like it's very overwhelming, excessive fear and anxiety, especially when there's too much chaos, you know, in our lives ahead of that. The side effects of the trauma, there's fear of abandonment, there's detachment, there's lack of ability to give and receive affection, separation anxiety, things like that. So once I realized that that was all connected, then I realized, oh, that's why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling. So in the first paragraph, I asked the question, why am I feeling this way? Why do I have no self-confidence? Why do I have anxiety, fear, things like that? And then that's when I started writing the book. When I come back from the hospital dealing with my mother, I thought to myself, you know, I have a great story to tell. Other people do it. Why can't I? So that's when I started writing the book.
Did you feel inspired to write it?
I have always listened to my intuition. I have always, you know, I never grew up in a religion till later in my life, but I always just relied on my intuition. I just thought, what is this telling me? And then I realized it was my intuition. Some part of me or God or Jesus or somebody was telling me, you have a story to write. And I thought, well, I'm not even a good writer. But you know what? Once I started writing it, it just came. It just flowed. And the words, I look at the words and I think, I didn't write that. Something helped me write that. and it was just amazing. But it came out so well. But, you know, it took me 20 years to write it.
Wow.
Because I had to get the questions answered, and I had to figure out things. I'd ask my stepmother, do you have pictures of my real mother? And she wouldn't give them to me. Then I'd ask my sisters and to ask her. No, you'll give them to Rose. So I eventually did get them, but, you know, putting the book together was really hard. And I could write a book about writing a book, because when my stepmother would see the manuscript on the coffee table, she would say, what's that? I say, well, that's the manuscript to the book that I'm writing. And she'd say, well, why are you writing that? I go, because it's about my childhood and things that happened. But at that time, I was still too afraid to talk to her about this. And so I had to rely on my sister, who ended up having a nervous breakdown at a hospital in Texas. And I asked her, I said, what? I don't know how to talk to our stepmother because she scares me too much. I just shake. And she said, well, let me teach you how. And so she taught me what they taught her when you're on the phone with her, how to get your power back and things like that. And eventually I confronted her. It's easier to do it on the phone than in person, but eventually I got my power back, and it came in years and years and years, and just applying what I had learned from all of my therapy, and eventually she answered my questions.
I'm amazed that you stuck with it so long. 20 years is a long time to be writing a story. I know you were going through all of the therapeutic aspects of it, processing, learning the facts, and that kind of thing. But that took a lot of stick-to-itiveness to do that.
Well, I was determined, and somehow in the middle of it, I was realizing, wow, this is really healing for me. And my sisters would make comments like, oh, wow, you just realized that. I'm like, yeah, I just realized that. You guys aren't realizing what I'm realizing. I'm the one writing it.
Right. Now, you married, how old were you when you married your first husband? Remind
19,
me. I think you married
19.
You were 19. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he wound up going to prison.
Yes.
And did you stay with him while he was in prison?
He went to prison when this is in 1996. My oldest was, I think, 17, and my youngest was like 8. Mm-hmm. And yes, I did, for the sake of the family. But in the meantime, I was going to therapy. I was showing my people in the church that I had attended, what about these letters? I think he's manipulating me. I couldn't see it because I was in the middle of it. And the bishops would say, yes, he's manipulating you. You need a divorce. And I had trouble with, okay, half of him is good, the other half is bad, and I was conflicted. I didn't know what to do. And so finally, one time, the therapist finally told me, they said, Rose, this is your problem. You have trouble with your happily ever after in your mind. You have to get rid of that. I'm like, what? I can't have the happily ever after, you know, of being in heaven with our family forever and all. No, you can't. I'm like, oh, okay, that's what's been holding me back. So once I realized that, then I did the divorce.
Then you did that. And did you marry again? Well, obviously you've married again because...
Oh, I got to tell you something about the first divorce, because my sister gave me advice. I was overthinking it. And she said, Rose, stop thinking about it and just do it. So when I prayed that night, this is my intuition coming into play. I said, Heavenly Father, this is what I've decided to do. I've decided to divorce. Is it the right thing to do? And then I crawled into bed and I was pondering. And this, all of a sudden, it came to my mind. It's time for you to heal. So that was, you know, an epiphany moment. So that's what I did.
I bet it was. That's an important moment to realize that. And you and Mike came into your life shortly thereafter?
No, I had married. I'd been divorced for like 4 years, and then I moved from Georgia. I was living with my kids. I moved to Utah, and I met this guy when I was, I think, 48 or something, and I was married to him for like 9 years. Well, during that time, there was, you know, a lot of healing. I learned a lot about marriage and counseling and all that, but I had outgrown him, and I didn't want to hurt his feelings and say, well, I'm sorry, but spiritually, I'm moving on. I sort of told him, but I didn't want to hurt his feelings. So my intuition was telling me, it's time for you to move on because there's somebody else. And so then, and he and my stepmother asked me, they said, "You're not happy, are you?" And I'm like, "No, I don't know if this is, what do you call it when you're having a midlife crisis, I think. I didn't know if it,
right.
that was, I knew it was my intuition. So I, by chance, I looked at my Yahoo and it said ourtime.com after I got divorced. And then I started finding different matches and dated like four times. I'm like, nope, they're not the one, they're not the one, they're not the one. Finally, I saw Mike's, I think I call him something else in the book, but I saw his, his
profile?
Profile. And I sent him a flirt or whatever, and he looked at all seven of my pictures. When I did my profile, I was genuine because I thought that's the type of person I am. I'm genuine. I'm going to say things. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to show different pictures of me at different ages, and pretend like it's me. And he looked at the pictures and he texted back and he said, "Oh my God, I looked into your eyes." He goes, "What they told me was you just need to be loved." And I'm like, "Oh my God, he picked up on that." Okay. and then after that, the name of the book is Truly Loved. Why is it called Truly Loved? Because of a poem that I wrote when I was sad with my first husband doing all this stuff. And it goes like this. Because this ties into my recent husband. Mm-hmm. It says, I want to disappear and not exist for a time. And sometimes I want to be in a place where I long to be heard and hugged by the only one who truly understands. And then can I feel truly loved? Well, okay, so that was given to me by my intuition also, and I also drew a picture on the cover of the book is a picture of a flower, even though that flower doesn't do justice to the real flower. The real flower has a tear in the, from the eye that goes down on one of the petals. That represents my sadness. Now, the thorns on the stem represent the hard times, but the tear is actually nourishing my soul and healing me, just as I have done. So that's what that means. So
wow,
after I was about to meet my current husband, subconsciously, I texted him on my way to go see him 30 miles away. I said, "I hope you're the one." And then I realized that years later, oh my gosh, that's what I was saying. I hope he's the one. Well, in his mind, he had been through marriages there with women that were mostly narcissistic and they didn't care. Well, he told me the story of him being a little boy having a flower, and a flower represented his love. Well, he would give these flowers to girls and to women later in his life, but they never accepted his love, and he couldn't understand. He goes, "All I want is just to find somebody who has real love, not all this other chaotic narcissism crap."
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
So he finally realized, like, he had been listening to the Moody Blues for 30 years, and there's a song called "Have You Heard?" Well, that song, for 30 years, all of a sudden it had meaning. And so then he pulled over the side of the road and was crying. He's like, "Oh, my God, this is an epiphany. I realized I finally found the one that can truly love me just as I can truly love her." So there you go.
Oh, that is so romantic. It's wonderful. Did he help you with the book?
Yes. In fact, that's why it took me 20 years, because in reality, if things didn't fall into place, then I couldn't have ended the book how and when I ended it. And so I couldn't figure it out. Why? Why have I gone through seven different titles? And finally, he said to me, he said, you have to name it Truly Loved. I go, "Why? I already had that title once before. Now I'm change it." He goes, "No, it's based on your poem." I'm like, "Oh yeah. Okay. And the flower that you do it." I'm like, "Yes. Okay. I get it now." And then he said, "That's how you have to end it, because, we found each other. You finally found true the love that you've been seeking for, and you finally feel like you are truly loved." I'm like, "Yes." So that's why I had to find him first, for him help me realize.
Now, Rose, you had the manuscript for some time, but what happened with the publishing part of it?
I had it in like, I started it in 1996 when this stuff happened with my mother, and then I had the manuscript kind of done in 2000. I had the manuscript on the, you know, table waiting to do something with it, but I didn't do anything with it till I married my second husband, and I thought, oh, okay, I keep working on this, I keep making changes. Okay, now it's been like probably 10 years, and I finally found a publisher, which was Balboa Press, and, you know, they tell you which one you can buy, and I think I bought one for a couple thousand or whatever, and then I just paid for it. I'm like, but I haven't finished the book yet. I'm not done yet. And then 10 years go by, and then I called them and I said, do you guys still have the payment that I made 10 years ago? Oh, yes. Come on, you got to get this done. And I'm like, okay. So then it all came together.
That's cool. That's very cool. So you now could say, the dream for you, getting back to where we started our conversation, is really finding the ability to be truly, to feel truly loved.
Yes.
And it isn't really so much the ranch as it is the importance of that relationship, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So what's next? What happens next?
Well, but what I realized, and this took a long time, I don't know why I didn't realize it, but I realized I had to learn to love myself. Well, in reality, I did love myself. I have never not loved myself, but I had to pay attention to that. I had to start loving myself more to help me get through all the trials and difficulties that I've had. Mm-hmm. Once I started doing that, I realized I can't just leave that out and hope that I'm going to be loved by somebody else and that's it. No, I have to learn to love myself as part of the healing.
And you feel that's, you've accomplished that, or are you still in process?
Yes.
You have? Okay.
I'm still definitely spiritually growing from that, but yes, I have definitely reached that point. And it's very easy for me to love myself. I've never not loved myself, but yeah.
Awesome.
But by
now,
loving yourself, you take care of yourself and you do what you have to do to get through this.
Right. And you did the therapy. You did all of the work.
Oh,
the inner
I did
work
years and years of therapy, yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Even though I still felt some symptoms of it, like whenever I talked to my stepmother, she'd give me guilt trips. And then eventually I did have to forgive, which I did. I actually helped her along the way. And now, you know, we're really close. But it's a process. You have to learn it. You have to do it. I asked someone one time, I said, I have so many people to forgive. How do I do it? And they said, you need to do it, but just do it in your own time. And then at one point, my stepmother and my husband, they were coming down on me trying to make it look like all this was my fault. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. You guys are lucky that you have me in your life. You're lucky I'm choosing to forgive both of you. So, you know, I just got stronger along the way.
Awesome. This is an amazing story when you think about how crazy it was. You were right when you said, I have an amazing story to tell, and I'm going to tell it. Because it's, and have you considered doing, you know, getting it out to movie people to see if they would do it as a movie?
Yes, but you have to have the, what do you call it, the screenplay first, and that costs a lot of money.
That does cost some money. It does.
But see, when I first started writing it, I already knew in my mind it was a movie. That's why I thought this would make a great movie, because it plays out so well. All the, you know, you've got children that are abused, they're neglected by their mother, they're kidnapped by their father. And me trying to find my mother all those years, and then deal with that, and then her death, and then deal with the stepmother, and my father's death. He died when I was 13. And our real mother tried to come out and find us, but they wouldn't let us see her. And it was 6 years since we wanted to see her. We knew she was in the same town, but no, they wouldn't let us. And then the lawyers were like, well, tell us what it was like living with your real mother. And we did. And they go, okay, what's it like with your stepmother? We couldn't tell them. She was sitting right there. So we had to live with her from the age of 13 to the time I left the house. And my younger sister, she had to run away. My oldest sister sent her some money, and she said, if you're still being abused by our stepmother, I'll send you a bus ticket and just get out of there. So she did, you know, and it's a process.
It's a real, I mean, it's an intricate story. with lots of, you know, turns and twists and that sort of thing. Did you, and I just want to mention to you that if you, if this is something that, you know, as you say, the Holy Spirit is in, and your intuition are encouraging you to do, keep holding that vision, because it is entirely possible that somebody will learn about your story, whether from the book or from, you know, the promotional activities that you do, and say, I have to tell that story. And it won't come the way that you think it has to come.
You know, I have no doubt, because all along that I've, since I started writing the book, my intuition is telling me, write the book. Why? Because if my story can help just one person, it would be worth it, because that's why I'm writing it, is to help that one person.
That's it. So up until now, what have you done to turn this into, you know, get the word out about the book and maybe turn it into a story that can reach more people?
So far, I've got a book trailer. I've got a website, rosesweetflower.com. I've done a radio interview with Kate Delaney. I've had other people approach me to make it into a movie, but I had to be careful because I'm thinking they were scams. Mm-hmm. I came across you right after I did the Kate Delaney one, and I'm just hoping that I can be interviewed possibly just to tell my story and go from there.
Which is a strong possibility. You know, there are so many ways that these messages get out. And I have, in the past year, really been focusing more and more on people's stories, because they inspire other people. They instruct other people, you know, and it can make a difference in so many people's lives when they find out the process that was involved, what it took you to actually reach a greater and greater point of healing and achieving a much better life. Do you have a good relationship with all your kids?
Yes, I do, actually. The ones that I don't, it would be because they're more active in a certain church and I'm not, but I'm still kind of close to them. But as far as my sisters, you know, me and my oldest sister did the work, but the other twins didn't, and because they didn't, still stuck where they were 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Wow.
So that's a lesson right there.
Are they okay with your having written the book?
No, they're jealous. My oldest sister is fine with it. She supports me the whole way. And I asked for her perspective in the book, and she gave a great perspective of everything that she went through and what she got out of it and her process in this life. But the other twins, one of them is narcissistic, the younger one, and the other one is in denial about everything. So because they haven't done the work, so that's why they're jealous.
And they may come around to it later.
Yeah,
you know, it's everything, as you say, everything in its own time. There is a time for these things to happen. And if it doesn't happen, it may happen later, even later than that, on another time schedule. So
right.
So where is the book available?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, all different languages. If you just Google it, you'll see it's everywhere. I was surprised it was in Walmart, not the store, but, you know, the link to buy it online.
The online? A lot of
online buyers. I recommend the soft cover. It's easier to read, and it's cheaper than the hardcover. So,
And where do people find out about you if they want to, you know, do you want to do any personal speaking?
RoseSweetflower.com, or they can just call my number. I don't care if they call my number. Do they?
Is it on your website?
If it's not, I'll make sure it's on there.
Okay. I always hesitate to give out personal phone numbers over the airwaves, but it is something that if they're really interested, they can go to the website.
I don't mind giving it out. I just don't want any scammers calling me.
That is always the issue, because there are so many of them now. So, what other information is available on the website aside from an order page to get the book?
Well, see, about the author and about the story, I've wrote it really nice, you know, talking about just briefly what it's about, and then about my life and where I go, where I'm going from here.
Mm-hmm.
I want my story to be told because I know it could help a lot of people. And my intuition's telling me, get it out there. That's
get
the purpose.
Out. Yeah. The purpose. Do you have any other insights or messages that you'd like to share with the audience?
I would say definitely listen to your intuition because that's a guide, and to hope was my guide for a long time. And I always had a good outlook. I've never been suicidal or anything like that, but I guess because I'm a strong person, I've become strong. I used to be really outgoing, but when all this stuff happened, it's like I withdrew into my shell. But I had to learn because I did the work. I didn't want to be what it made me. I didn't want to be that anymore. I wanted to mm-hmm. be strong and come out of it and get my power back. And I learned how to do that. And because I have, I'm very happy in my life right now.
Which is a wonderful place to be.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for sharing your story with us, Rose. Let's remind our listeners. We've been talking with Rose Sweetflower about her book, Truly Loved, which is available online. So Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and Walmart online. If anything resonates with you about her story, you may find many healing words within it and guidelines and examples of how you could take control over a situation you need to deal with. And thank you again, Rose. You know, we're going to bring this call in for a landing. And I want to thank everybody. I want to thank you for joining us. I want to thank the listeners for finding out about you. And I want to mention to everyone that if you'd like help bringing your own dream to life, check out my website, www.embracepositivechange.com, and learn about upcoming events that I may have, or write me directly at susan@susanshirako.com. Let's get you on the road to your own vision fulfilled. Because that's where the real joy in life comes true. So bye for now and have a great day.